Hello, 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 and welcome to the next episode of the Shane Walsh Podcast. So today's episode is a brilliant, brilliant episode, if I do say so. So today's episode is Martina Gutt, who is a female fitness coach who helps busy women achieve confidence through realistic habits and no restrictions. And I met Martina at an event I was speaking at about 2 years ago. And it's pretty cool to see where Martina is at relation to her business, her side of things. And I really want to get her on because she's a really, really interesting story to tell in relation to how her life and how her outlook is towards her coaching. So we talk about her amazing story, her recovery through HA or hypothalamic amenorrhea. We talk about how bodies are not meant to stay the same and why they will change and how we can accept that. We talk about why body positivity is bullshit. And I think that's a hugely insightful topic that we kind of talk about. We talk about the four pillars for body acceptance that Martina has as well. And we also talk about that feeling of that you're not doing enough when it comes to fat loss or weight loss or whatever, anything that you're trying to do. So I really hope you enjoyed today's episode with Martina. And as always, you can click on the link in the show notes in order to work with Martina or if you want to give her a follow as well. So hopefully you enjoyed today's episode. So before I go into today's episode, I just want to give you a quick little update that there is a free resource on how to lose weight without tracking calories. It's a free ebook. It's 9 pages. It's been created by myself. And it's a really useful step-by-step approach on how to do that. MyFitnessPal is a great tool. Those apps are a great tool in the right hands. A hammer is a great tool in the right hands, but you wouldn't give it to a child. Now, counting calories is an amazing tool, but not everyone should be doing it. If it's a whole point that you don't count on weekends, maybe it's a point that you don't count when you've gone over your calories, or you don't count when maybe you've snacked a little bit more, that's a sign that MyFitnessPal isn't the right tool for you, and you probably need to learn how to do it without it. There's a reason why 85% of my one-to-one clients, whose photos you can see up on my social media and the transformations that they've had from mental health, relationship with food, the transformation photos that they have, that's because they've learned how to eat for themselves. So this could be the most important ebook that you've ever downloaded. So if you're looking for a free resource, click on the link in the show notes, download your free copy, and I hope that you enjoy it. Martina, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you. So thank you so much for coming on. And where I know there's loads that we're going to talk about, but massive congratulations on getting called up to Wellfest.
Thank you so much. It was very last minute and I did have to cancel my flights to attend it. But honestly, I was so shocked myself and very flattered and honored to be speaking, especially on such an amazing panel and on a topic that I'm super passionate about as well.
It's a really cool thing to get involved with. And I know you're on with Michelle, who's been on the podcast before as well. So you're definitely in good company. So fair play for that. So for anyone that isn't aware of who you are and what you're doing and your story, can you give us a little bit of a background?
Sure. I suppose the best way to answer this and where to start is what I'm currently doing, and then reverse engineer on how I got there, because I suppose all the decisions and steps I took kind of led me to where I am right now. But I'm a health and fitness coach, which is a very broad term. And now, especially with the fitness industry expanding, particularly since COVID. So I guess to give you a glimpse into how that looks like day to day, I help women achieve confidence and improve the quality of their life through realistic habits. I focus in specifically on helping this women cultivate a positive relationship with their body, with food, break free from unsupportive habits, diet culture, unrealistic fitness regimes. So it's a very holistic and rounded view of fitness. And I guess if you were to ask me 10 years ago, what does a job of a fitness coach look like? I would have told you, oh, if I go into the gym, a person is going to push me, make me sweat, count my reps. And that's kind of the view I had. But there's so much more that goes into a person's well-being and their confidence, their happiness, which is outside of just diets and training plans. And I guess it's something that I missed myself throughout my own fitness journey, which led me down to just negative associations with body, with food, which I'm sure we can get down into down the line as well. But yeah, that's where currently I am at, helping women with confidence and with a better quality of life.
And then I know every single person that I ever talk to on these podcasts, the big thing that they kind of mention is the story that gets them to where they're at. And yours is a particularly interesting story because I know there's pictures that you've shared up on social media, but often the pictures don't put actually into words what has actually happened and what's been going on. So I'm going to let you kind of talk about that a little bit.
To take you back to the real beginning, I guess where it all started was 2015. And I vividly remember this day because it really stuck with me and it really changed the way I started to view exercise and food and the way my body looked. And a friend and I were going to the cinema and there was a group of guys sitting outside, guys from school that we knew. And one of them shouted, being like, "Oh, Martina, you would be great if you lost some weight." And that really stuck to me. Because first of all, I was 15 and it really just changed to the way I started to perceive my body. And now if somebody said that to me, it would literally play zero space or, you know, over and over again in my head, but it did back in the day. And fast forward 2-3 years, then I finished my leaving cert, went to college, and it was a time where you're spending a lot more time like amongst different people and more time on social media, more time comparing yourself. And I was already at a place where I felt insecure, unhappy with my body, at a place where I was trying to fit in and be liked, looking for that external validation. And it was a time where I guess I embarked on my fitness journey and where it all started. The goal was to be small and skinny. I honestly just viewed fitness and health as a means of changing my body composition and to be smaller, nothing else. So that's where it all began, where I got myself into the gym. I started looking at diets. I was following fitness influencers. So watching YouTube videos, reading blog posts. TikTok didn't exist back in the day, so it wasn't even reels, but actually having to go online and read articles. And I would try and apply what those people were doing, those fitness influencers usually, or maybe celebrities as well. And I thought that if I do what they're doing, eat it the way they're eating, train like them, I am going to get the body that they have. And I would change things up all the time. Go in, do it for 2 weeks, fall off track, get frustrated with myself because A, I just didn't have a clue what I was doing. So I thought the best thing would be to try everything, like jump on every fad diet that there was going. And the pursuit of wanting to feel more confident, the pursuit of wanting to be accepted, liked, sort of turned into an obsession around my body. And it's as if I tied my identity to the way I looked because I began to change. Like I did begin to lose the weight, but it was done through such restrictive methods. It was intermittent fasting, you know, cutting out my breakfast and drinking celery juice for breakfast instead. It went from eating 1500 calories to 1200 calories, then celebrating if I hit under 1000 calories. I was like, wow, you know, I'm so disciplined, I'm so motivated, I'm eating so little, exercising every day and being really hyper focused on my body to the point that I developed body dysmorphia. And for anyone that doesn't know, it is having these anxious thoughts about your body, your perception of your body, and not how your body looks in reality. So looking back on my pictures back then, back in 2018, 2019, I was so like skinny, shredded, you know, I had like visible abs and whatnot, but every time I looked in the mirror, I just hated how my body looked. Every time I took a picture, I was criticizing the way my body looked. I had to step on the scales every single day with honestly, literally like anxiety in my throat. Oh my God, is that number gonna go up? And if it did, I would be back on the treadmill. So that pursuit of wanting to change went into this obsessive and disordered behavior, which I didn't think it would. But I guess it was back to the comment I heard of, you know, I would be a better person, I would be more valued if I was smaller. So it continued like this for a couple of years, which like obviously led me down the path of, yeah, I might be getting external validation and praise for the way I'm looking, but my health was definitely not a definition of a healthy person. So that's kind of like the first couple of years of where like the fitness journey embarked on. And after a while, that was also like, I came in just as I embarked on my fitness journey, and I was kind of in the midst of this like obsessive diet culture, eating and exercising. I also came off the pill, so I lost my period. But I suppose because I wasn't having my period, I started to look more into, okay, maybe I'm doing something wrong that is making me not have my cycle. So I did change my view of fitness along the way. I suppose that was one factor, but there was other things as well. Like I was constantly tired. I had massive mood swings. I thought about food all the time, and I was like, okay, there's a point where enough is enough. So I did start to develop a different view of fitness, a more healthier view of fitness, and flipped that mindset around into actually looking after my energy, my health, fueling my body properly, and not striving to be as small and skinny. Although like the first transition was like, oh, I want muscles and I want big glutes. So it was still sort of connected to external appearance and body composition as opposed to just internal happiness, confidence, and my health for a while. But where I am currently is my focus is on eating and fueling myself with foods that give me energy, that allow me to focus and concentrate, training to be strong for performance, for my health, and engaging in habits that really improve the quality of my life and not just an external appearance. So I suppose that's kind of like a quick summary of how I went from, I suppose when I first started the gym and embarked on my fitness journey was 2017, and now fast forward to 2024 and where I am now as opposed to where I was 8 years ago.
And did you get help along the way from professionals, or was it kind of a self-work, self-taught process to get you from the acceptance validation from others to learning how to accept where you're at and fueling your body, making yourself stronger, etc.?
It was a combination of both. I definitely did my own learning, but then I also decided that, okay, I'm spinning around in circles. I'm not getting anywhere. I need to hire somebody to help me with this. So I worked with coaches. I worked with personal trainers. I did a nutrition course as well. And that opened my eyes to actually what health and fitness is, that allowed me to like reprogram my mindset. And so I feel I should have reached out for help sooner than I did and actually got a proper program, proper nutrition targets that are specific to me and not following other people's thinking I am going to be in the shape they are by doing what they're doing. So I was ignorant to the fact that there is people that can actually help me with my goals and not having to go through all the hardship, and I could have achieved what I wanted through actually like structured programming and personalized nutrition. So yeah, it took a long time because I was trying to do it myself. It came from my own learning because it's something that I was interested anyway, but I did also get external help and I was working with coaches. I was working with personal trainers to like improve on my knowledge around food and training.
I think it's important what you said there about kind of like, it may have taken longer, but you probably also needed to make those little stories and mistakes and stuff along the way in order to see that you maybe needed the help or probably learned different things along the way. I think Where would you stand on the whole thing that someone needs to be ready in order to change? Or is there a perfect time?
I don't think there is a perfect time, and you cannot force somebody into change. And yes, you're totally right. When I was a few years ago, like what I'm saying now is because it's coming from a place of doing a lot of self-reflection and a lot of work on my mindset and myself to be able to look back and be like, okay, that was all very unsupportive towards actually having a good quality of life, but I didn't know it at the time. And making those mistakes makes me a coach that I am now. If I didn't go through all of this, then I wouldn't have I wouldn't have the knowledge that I do now in terms of what people do actually go through in terms of all these different diets, because I've tried everything. I tried all fitness regimes, all styles of trainings, all diets. And yes, I made those mistakes. But now when I have somebody come to me, I actually am so quick at identifying where the problems are lying and how to fix it.
Do you think that helps you as a coach?
Sorry?
Do you think that helps you as a coach, knowing what people are going through?
Yeah, 100%. Because most of the women that come to me now, I'm in the exact same position as they were, with the same struggles. And if I didn't go through any of that, for example, if I didn't undergo this whole journey, my own fitness journey for the last 8 years, and decided to just go into the career of being a coach, not having gone through that, I wouldn't have the same understanding. I wouldn't be able to resonate with those people in the same way and have the same compassion towards them, because I'm like, I know what you're going through. I know your frustrations. I know it sucks. And like, these are the steps that we need to take, because they're the totally opposite ones that I've done, which led me down a path which you don't want to go down in.
No, definitely not. And I think you've spoken very openly there, so thank you for that. But you've also spoken really openly on your social media as well. When I was doing the research for the questions kind of coming on, and one of the things you talk about is comparison. And one of the things you talk about in particular is that comparison piece about comparison against yourself. You mentioned that, like, I'll let you talk about that a little bit more, about like when you talk about the comparison against yourself, why it's important to have the right narrative around it. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I know the post you're talking about. And I think both you and I can agree that for the most part, comparison is negative. It's not actually inspirational, because how many times do we just sit there on social media and then we see a photo pop up and instantly we compare our regular day-to-day body to that photo we see or a video, and we just feel shit in ourselves. And or we see somebody achieving something, now everyone's into running, right? Like how everyone's running half marathons, and it's so easy to just sit on the couch and then blame yourself for, oh, I'm just not doing enough, I'm just being lazy. And it's, I suppose, easier to spot when we are comparing ourselves to other people. And there is stuff that we can do in terms of breaking away from that comparison. For example, filtering the accounts that we see online, or educating ourselves on the fact that social media is not a true perception of reality, and a lot of it is just a highlight reel, perfect angles, perfect lighting, highly edited a lot of the times. But on the flip side of the coin is the comparison we make to our older selves, that we often forget, that actually just drives us deeper into a black hole, that we feel worse in our bodies and actually creates a negative relationship that we have with our body image. And I often catch myself too comparing myself to my older self, because I was at a place where I was a lot smaller, a lot leaner. I was getting a lot of validation. And sometimes I get memories back from the place that I was in. And at that time, I was very, you could call it motivated, but like really on the ball with like food, with training, with everything, like ticking off the boxes. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm not like this anymore. But you gotta remind yourself when you do fall into that comparison trap of comparing to who you were before is, would you really give up everything that you have gained to get to the place that you are now, in terms of all the experiences that you had, or like the different mindset, the growth that happened, the uncomfortable things you had to go through to get to your place? And I think a lot of people will agree with me and say no, like they would not give up everything that they have gained to be in that position. So it is something that we need to catch ourselves doing as well when we do compare our body now to where it was, because bodies are not meant to stay the same. And something I wish I was told before, because I'm somebody that likes to be in control, and for most of my life I tried to control a lot of my situations in life. And same goes with my body. So when I got to a place where my identity was tied to the way I looked, I felt that I want to remain in this shape forever. But bodies change. Bodies change as we transition through life. You know, some women are go through pregnancy, and obviously like our body is going to change then. But I went through a big transition a year ago where I changed careers. I moved back in with my parents after like living by my like on my own for 8 years. I was recovering from HA and fully went into recovery with that, where I gained a lot of weight. So my body changed because I was more stressed. There was more uncertainty in my life. I was focusing on health as opposed to aesthetics, and being okay with it, the fact that it will change and it's not supposed to stay forever. I guess it's something that really helped me in terms of comparing myself to my older version of myself.
I think a big sentence I took out of that was, bodies are not meant to stay the same. And I think it's really important that the bodies will change as you kind of get older. And I know people can struggle as they kind of get older of kind of looking back in old photos, and then we can associate, like, well, I was that weight. So if I was happy at that weight, I'm going to be happy again at that weight. And often you weren't happy at that weight. It's the feeling that you have. It's the acceptance and the validation you're probably getting from others, which is saying, I'm going to be happy at 70 kg. But if you think back to that reality, you're probably still nitpicking. You're seeing outfits on, you're looking at yourself in the mirror, or you're comparing yourself to other people. So often it's not about the weight. It's a feeling that you get. I always say to clients, it's not about the weight. The body you want is going to weigh more than you actually think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And even if it's not an unhealthy weight, I think what you mentioned in terms of, I'd be happy when I be at that weight, because I was at that weight and I was happy. I was like, I always remind clients of this, in terms of, you were happy not because of the way you looked, because of the way you had created your lifestyle to align with the values that you have. And obviously there's something out of alignment at the moment that is just not giving you the same satisfaction. So it's the detachment of your body, your appearance, size, shape, whatever it is that you're attaching your happiness to, that is actually going to help you bring that fulfillment back into your life.
I really like that about that living the values piece, because I talk about that a lot. And like, there's something out of kilter, something out of whack. And often it's priorities. It's your family is your priority, or work is your priority. And that's why it can be harder when, as we kind of head into our 30s, 40s, 50s, that the next chapter is happening and your own time isn't your own. You're kind of doing an awful lot of things for other people. One of the big things that we'll stay on the topic of kind of like body positivity and all that kind of stuff and how people look. You have a controversial opinion. It's controversial for some, but I kind of agree with you that body positivity isn't actually that helpful. Can you expand why you think that?
Body positivity is bullshit. And look, the whole movement in itself has its merits. I'm not disregarding that. But I think the message of, you should love your body every single day, is really unrealistic for people struggling with their body image. And even when I was, I had body dysmorphia, and despite how I looked, when I looked in the mirror, I hated my body. If somebody was to just shout in my ear, "You just gotta love your body," it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't change a thing. And there is a more realistic approach that allows people to cultivate a positive body image that is not the message of you should love your body every single day, every minute of the day.
Yeah, I agree with you. I know Jamie Rice was on last night talking to the clients, and he helps people overcome binge eating. And he spoke about body positivity. And it is one of those things, like, there's no one out there that loves their body every single day of the week or every hour of the day, every minute of the day. It's accepting what your body can do for you. But it's also understanding how to talk to yourself and not be a complete and utter dick to yourself when maybe you haven't slept properly, or maybe you've eaten something out of the norm, or you might be feeling a little bit more bloated, or it could be the time of the month or whatever it is. I think it's important to understand that, like, right, this is your body for a reason. It's the vessel you're going to be living in. So you spend most of your time talking to yourself. So you got to get used to having better coping mechanisms on how to narrate the different things that are happening, because often what we're thinking about ourselves isn't what we've been thinking. It's little stories that we've picked up along the way that are being projected onto us. I think when people can understand that through awareness, through therapy, through whatever it may be, do you think there's enough support for people out there with the likes of body dysmorphia and binge eating? And you've also mentioned your recovery through HA as well.
I definitely don't think there is enough support, and I also don't think it is spoken about enough, and it is a huge issue people are facing. I do want to, before I go into that, you mentioned acceptance, just as we're on that topic still, and although I say body positivity is bullshit, I am really forward, or I suppose I support the movement of body acceptance. And I think it's just a better way to look at it in terms of actually having a better relationship with your body. Because as you said, there isn't going to be every single day that you are going to be completely happy with your body. There are going to be days where you don't necessarily feel good in yourself, but you can learn to accept your body despite being 100% satisfied with it. And there's different methods that you can apply. And there's four in particular that I like to look at. And one of them is being actually defining what beauty means to you. And often isn't actually down to the size and appearance, because something I like to, like, an exercise I like people to follow when they are looking to improve their relationship with their body is take their mother, for example, or their best friend, somebody that they really care about, and look at them and list out all the qualities. Do you look at your best friend and be like, "I love you as a best friend because you are a size X or you weigh X on this case"? None of that matters when it comes down to a person that you're super close with. And that you should apply the same logic to yourself when it comes to your body. You are never looking at somebody and judging them or the person they are by their actual external appearance, but it can be the way they treat you, their kindness, their smile, the positive energy that they bring into the room. And doing an exercise like this with yourself and putting yourself into the shoes of, like, your best friend and the way, like, you would speak about her, then it's really great in terms of reprogramming that subconscious of the way you think about your body. So that's kind of one of them that I just wanted to point out, that because I think we often do, as you say, talk really negatively about our body, and we don't even realize the power that those words and our thoughts have on the way that we then show up and the respect we have. So if we wouldn't treat anyone else that we know with such disrespect, why are we doing it to ourselves?
You mentioned there was four pillars, I think so you called the term that you use. What are the other three?
Yeah, so the second one would be to stop comparing yourself to others, which we already spoke about briefly, but actually looking at you and your own journey in isolation to everyone else's, because it's so easy to feel like you aren't good enough if all you're doing is sitting scrolling Instagram or TikTok and watching what everyone else is achieving and how everyone else is looking. Because we got to remember that we have different, back to values, but then different priority commitments. Some people are busy moms with 3 children, full-time job, that don't have as much time and resources to put into the way they look as somebody, a fitness model where training and eating is their job. So that stopping comparing ourselves to what other people are doing and really just zoning in on where we are, meeting ourselves where we are currently and the progress that we are making, even though it might be trivial in comparison to somebody else's, it doesn't matter. So that's the second. The third one is wearing clothes that you feel comfortable and confident in, because we are supposed to fit clothes and not clothes supposed to fit us. And I know, I really do know how disheartening it is going into a changing room and trying on 10 different pairs of jeans and they might not be fitting you. But the way the clothes are made, there's no one size. I go into Zara and yeah, I think it's made for absolute, like, kids. Anyway, so some of yeah, honestly, go into there and one pair of jeans wouldn't even go past my toe, and then I go into Penny's and that same size might be swimming on me. And it's important, again, don't base your value off a number, because the clothes are not manufactured to you exactly, and you aren't, like, you're not meant to fit that particular clothing. And just finding something you like, if going in to the changing rooms gives you anxiety, pick up loads of different sizes of the same pair of jeans, for example, or a dress. Don't even look at the tag of it, just try it on. Which one do you feel the most comfortable in, and just wear that. It really helps in terms of improving your relationship with your body and accepting it for what it is. And the fourth one was the support network that you have and the people around you, the information that you take in, and that goes both with your proximity network of, like, friends and family, but also social media. So actually altering and auditing the people that you follow and listen to, and it can be easier said than done in some cases. I think we do have a lot of control in terms of who we follow, and we can delete, mute, block accounts. And it's not, no, I was going to say it's not selfish. It is selfish, but it's okay to be selfish, because you have to put yourself first in that instance. And actually, if any accounts that you follow are actually making you feel more crap in your body by engaging with them and watching their content, block them, remove them. Even if they are your friends, if they're your friends, they're going to understand that perhaps you're not in the best headspace currently. You're trying to work on improving your body image and you just need to take a little step back. And I know myself, a year ago when I was, like, going into full recovery from HA, I just needed to gain weight. And as a fitness coach, like, that was really hard for me, because I felt, I suppose, even more pressured to look the part of the fitness industry. And for a huge part of my fitness journey, I was fairly lean. So although there wasn't any pressure for anyone, like, nobody was putting that pressure on me, I know it was self-inflicted, but I know I needed to remove myself from being constantly exposed to accounts that were heavily focused on aesthetics at the moment. And it's not forever. It can be temporary. We already talked about bodies not staying the same and changing. And I think that another view in terms of that is that we often think that what is happening to us and the mindset that we have, it's forever, but things change. And if we start to view things long term, knowing that what you are currently going through and the life transitions that's happening, they aren't going to be around. You're going to be in all, like, different kind of aspects of your life where you have different values, different priorities, and different commitments. So yeah, the fourth one is just a support network and what you expose yourself to.
They are very, very, very useful for people that are listening, because I think we all do them. Like, we all do them to a point, I would say, in different ways, in different stages. I think it is important that comparison thing. Comparison does serve a purpose for some things, but it can also destroy us in other ways. In relation to, you mentioned there about your recovery from HA, and for anyone that doesn't know what HA, it's hypothalamic amenorrhea, where you lose your cycle through overexercising, not eating enough, and binge eating as well, or anorexia nervosa or bulimia nervosa. So how did you get your head around of having, because I've worked with clients in HA recovery, and the hardest part for them is that gaining the weight. And it's because your narrative, or what's been pushed onto you in particular for women and females, is to look skinny. It's now the narrative's changing, but it has been for such a long time. How did you break away from that narrative yourself? Like, what was the biggest struggle for you?
It definitely was mentally very challenging. It took me a long while, I guess, before, because I've had HA for 5 years, and I was trying to recover through the medical system, which I wasn't getting any answers, and none of GPs, gynos, any medical professionals were actually giving me diet and exercise recommendations. It was more so, here is a drug that is going to temporarily fix your problem, which isn't actually solving the underlying issue, which we can go into further down the line. But so I was going back and forward. And obviously it was a long process, because you're getting your blood work done, then you have to wait for the results, then you're waiting to get an appointment. So it's not that all of this is happening week after week. It's, you are in limbo for maybe 2-3 months before you get to see somebody and get another answer and maybe make a step forward. So amongst all that, while that was happening, and I knew I didn't want to go down the route of just taking a synthetic drug again, I started to improve my diet, play around with exercise, but I was doing it all by myself. So like, I would tell myself like, okay, now it's time to focus on eating more and exercising less. And then I joined CrossFit, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm just gonna do CrossFit. Like, it sounds very ignorant, but that I just didn't know. I just didn't know what I was doing, because I didn't have the support. I didn't have the information, and I was just trying my best. But I was also so frustrated and so pissed off that I didn't have an answer, that I was like, might as well just live my life. And then I would go back and be like, no, I need to do something about it. So it was a long process. I started working with a health coach then, where I was like, no, this needs to like come to an end. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And that's when we were working on eating more, working out less. And I thought, because I started working with that health coach last January, so about 18 months ago, and I thought that at that point, I kind of have broke free from the diet culture, and my relationship with my food and my body was okay. It was a lot better than when I, back in 2019, when I was like doing the extreme diets and unrealistic fitness regimes, but it definitely wasn't 100% healed. And it all came out to the surface when I actually had to just focus away from aesthetics completely. Mentally, it was tough. Yeah. And I think what you said, because A, of the narrative that women are told, that gaining weight, being bigger, whether that's putting on weight, putting on muscle, is unattractive and a negative thing. And there is that idea of what beauty standards are and what women's supposed to look like. So And we're constantly being reminded of that, whether that is literally and directly or indirectly through like media and social media, but also because I had so much habits built up from the diet culture that they were probably a lot harder to break through. And there was stuff that even emotional eating, it was something that, again, it's just upon reflection now that I'm like, it was something I struggled since I was like 10. And like that came to surface even more because I was so down. First of all, I just wasn't feeling like a woman because I was like, am I ever going to have a cycle again? It's been like 5 years. This is not coming back. Second of all, I was gaining all this weight, feeling uncomfortable in myself, exercising less, where exercise is something that I also use to improve my mental health too. So the fact that I wasn't able, I was like, I want to push myself. I want to achieve these goals in terms of fitness, but I know I shouldn't because they're just pushing my hormones out of whack. So mentally it was hard, but I'm glad that at that point where I was like fully going in, I had a support of somebody, and just to even talk it through and have that person to be like, what you're going through is so normal. Like, you know, you shouldn't be feeling guilty for it. It's going to pass. It's not forever. And it actually, while the goal was to recover from my period, it helped me so much to fully achieve like food freedom and have such a better, like, I'm almost glad I had to go through this, because where I am currently now in terms of my relationship towards food and my body, it's never been that good.
Interesting that you said you're glad you went through it. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not glad I had to go through all the hardship with a HA, but the last period, about like 12 months ago, in terms of working with a health coach to fully detach myself from aesthetics, actually allowed me to build up more self-worth in myself, and because I'm completely detached from how I look. It's, and don't get me wrong, it's not, I don't care how I look and I don't care how my body is and body composition, but it does not dictate the value of me as a person. And because we were working on completely coming away from the aesthetics and body composition and solely focusing on my health, like that are, these are my priorities right now. And whatever I do in terms of my diet, in terms of exercise, it supports me in terms of how I feel, my mood, my focus, my productivity, as opposed to just the way my body will change.
I get you. No, it makes sense. Makes sense. And I know I could be wrong here. You're on a cut or a mini cut at the minute, correct?
Yeah.
How are you finding that, and are you catching yourself at certain stages, or are you finding old thoughts are kind of creeping back in, or how are you kind of monitoring that with the background that you've had?
No, I've been finding it so good. I'm wrapping that up in like a couple of days. Like I said, I'm going to do 8 weeks. We're like halfway, like it's been 7.5 weeks. And I think it's because I'm in such a different mindset right now. Although I decided I'm going to do a small fat loss because I'm moving away and I wanted to tidy things up. And purely from the fact that when I to go into like a small fat loss, I tidy up my nutrition in a way that it's actually like more structured. My digestion is better. My energy is better, because sometimes I get lazy and then I end up like mindlessly slacking and then just eating things that I know aren't really great for my digestion. And this is not to say like, oh, you need a goal of fat loss to actually work on these. Absolutely not. But I think because I've been through so many years of where I dieted, I bulked, maintenance phases, now this approach was so different because I'm not measuring myself, I'm not weighing myself, I'm not tracking any calories. it's so like loose, but it just shows that small lifestyle habit changes can actually lead to a change. And it doesn't have to be. Part of me at times feel like, oh, maybe I'm not doing enough. And again, that's the comparison. And nobody is immune to that. Although I speak about all these methods of not comparing yourself, I still find myself catching myself looking at what other people are doing that are in a fat loss phase and all tracking these calories, doing all this cardio, doing all the steps. And I'm like, I'm not doing any of that. I've been eating out almost every single weekend. I've been socializing, enjoying myself. I'm like, nothing really changed in my life apart from the fact that I'm managing my portions a little bit better and I'm being a little bit more mindful about all these like random snacks that I was having a little bit more water, walking a little bit more. I'm not doing any intentional cardio that is geared towards like fat loss. So I feel because of where I am in my mindset and the relationship I do have towards my body, towards food, it's just been so fine. Like I can genuinely say there wasn't a time where I found myself that I am being like restrictive in the way that all those habits that I used to have a couple of years ago are like being brought back to surface. They're not. And if they were, I would totally stop because I don't value looking a certain way over my health anymore, which I did. Like I put my hand up. I didn't really care about my health. I just really cared about how I looked, which isn't actually the case anymore.
And I appreciate you sharing that because I think the sentence that stuck out for me there is that whole thing of I'm not doing enough. I think it's definitely what comes through from clients that are working with myself and Alyssa, who's the other coach. They feel that they need to struggle or they feel that this should be harder. It feels it needs to be this restrict and binge cycle that they're so used to. But often it's more a reflection of like self-worth, of that maybe something was said when they were a kid of like, oh, you're lazy, you don't want it enough. They're so used to be shamed into change or guilting into change, and it's often a projection onto the actual method or the food. So it's interesting that you're finding that that little voice is kind of ramped up, but you're able to kind of swat it away quite easily. And it's interesting that you're not doing it as with counting calories as well. How do you find the not counting calorie method? Because I think a lot of people would like to. I have no issue with people counting calories, genuinely. If it serves a purpose and gives you the education and you're using it correctly, great. But if you're skipping out on it when things don't go, in inverted commas, right, or skip out of it or leave things out of it, it's definitely the wrong tool for you. So how have you found the approach that you're going through from not counting calories?
Yeah, I found it really good, but I think I have no issue with people counting calories whatsoever. Yeah. Just want to say, because I have clients who count calories and I've done it for a chunk period of my time as well. And I found it actually quite helpful. Like it given me a lot of self-awareness. It's given me a lot of knowledge around the nutrition value of food, whether I am actually eating enough. And it's not only calorie counting isn't only when I was going through recovery with HA, I was counting calories because we just need to make sure that I am fueling myself enough. So it gives you more self-awareness, whether you're fueling your body in the right way, whether you're getting enough of the right macronutrients as well. But over time, I suppose where I see the issue with tracking is people choose it as their first tool before building out good structure around eating habits, actually being in tune with hunger and satiety signals, mindful eating, including nutrients, drinking enough water, having like a regular eating pattern. All these factors are in the bin while calories are being tracked, and it's just all over the place. So this is where I think it becomes an issue. And first, what has to be in place is actually a way of eating that you see yourself eating like this for the rest of the life, for the rest of your lifetime. And this is what I do with every single client who wants to track calories. If that is not in place, if we don't have a regular eating schedule, you're not eating enough fruit and veg, you're not drinking enough water, you're not having like a protein source with like at least your three meals, then we're not going to track calories, because you need to earn the right to do that, because it's an additional tool that allows you to gauge how much you're eating and whether you're eating enough of the right macronutrients. But first, it just, there needs to be that level of awareness in terms of food structure and quality as well. And for my own self, because I've been through such long periods of tracking intuitively, I actually found a way that I will eat like this for the rest of my life. And because I have so much knowledge now built up from tracking, I know that I'm eating enough protein. I know roughly that, look, I've obviously been monitoring my changes, so things are moving in the way I wanted them to move without needing to necessarily log them into my fitness pal. And yeah, I actually found it really good. I don't think there is a need. And again, you also said about your clients feeling like it should be hard, like this is feeling too easy. And that goes back to people having a bad experience with it, where things have ended up in binge eating and doing extreme cardio routines and being so tired and so stressed that it had like a negative impact on their lifestyle, that when it feels easy, they're like, I should be doing more. But it all comes down to small habit changes. I feel like for majority of people that are simply looking to just improve their diet and feel a little healthier and more fitter, it doesn't need to come down to the minutiae stuff. It can really just be true simple things. And a lot of people would see tremendous changes by applying small things like having 3 to 4 meals, having 5 servings of fruit and veg, eating mostly minimally processed nutrient-dense foods, and drinking 2-3 liters of water. And that in itself, if like most people applied that, they would already see a massive change without having to go down into counting calories.
That seems way too easy though.
It sounds easy. And you know what? I think a lot of a term that is being spoken about now is intuitive eating. And I feel like when people have no idea how to eat properly, they won't succeed on their intuitive eating journey. I don't think strict food rules are supportive, but I do believe that a lot of people need the guidance, some sort of a template and a structure to help them, rather than being like, you are free to eat what you want when you want.
Yeah. And I remember I had the creator or the co-creator of Intuitive Eating on. I had Evelyn Tribole. I think that's how you pronounce her surname. And if it's not, I sincerely apologize. I mess it up so many times on the episode as well. And like when she was talking about when she's kind of out for meals, sometimes she'll eat past fullness, and she's the creator of the bloody thing.
Yeah.
People think that because they've eaten past fullness, they fail. It's like, no. Humans will overeat. Our brains are not used to the amount of food we have available to us right now. So there's always food abundance, but there's also a certain amount of choices that we can give in a day, and a certain amount of bandwidth we can give to those choices. So that's why we get so overwhelmed when we're in the shops, or like, we don't know what to have. If you were in the shops 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was like, simple foods that were there. Now it's either highly palatable foods. It's actually harder to eat wholesome foods than it is to eat on a less wholesome diet, if you really want to go down that way. But the big thing is, like, structure is huge. But when people hear structure, they freak out, because they feel it's going to limit them. They're going to say, well, I can't eat outside of this. But if you create, as you said, that it's a framework of like, well, I'm going to have 3 regular meals, 2 or 3 snacks a day, more often than not. But people forget that they put a full stop after 3 meals, 2 or 3 snacks, and forget the more often than not. Yeah. It's about doing more often than you are currently, and that's progress. And people forget that that's progress. People only use the sad stuff as the progress. They forget about, have you got more protein into your life? Are your measurements down? Are you feeling better? Are you able to get up the stairs without your knees falling off? Are you able to lift up your kids out your back, wrecking yourself? Have you got more confidence? Is your libido up? All these kind of different things. They're massive, massive wins, but they're coming from creating some element of structure majority of the time.
Yeah, it's about having the flexibility and adaptability as well, and not being super rigid. In terms of eating as well, there's so many other reasons why we eat than physical hunger. And food has, for so many years, been used as a way of celebrations. It's been used, and there's nothing wrong. I think when I was overcoming emotional eating, I thought, like, I cannot be eating emotionally, but emotional eating isn't necessarily bad. It's when it's the only thing that you use to cope with the emotions that you have. But like, we all emotionally eat, and then that doesn't mean people have a problem with food, because we are going to overeat when the food is tasty, when we're going out for a meal. And if it's intentional overeating, it's not the wrong. It's okay to eat.
Yeah, no, 100%. If it is the only tool that you're using to soothe yourself with, well, then that may be the area to look at, rather than other things, and understanding where that mechanism has come from. Is it a safety mechanism as a way to control the situation? Maybe something, some grief, trauma, other elements happened in childhood, a bereavement, whatever it may be that has happened, and that's your way to control the outcome to make you feel safe. It's been the one constant in your life. People love and leave you, but food will always be there, and food will always be there. We live in this world where food abundance, and our brains cannot process it. That is all. Martina, I cannot thank you enough for coming on. Where can people find out about you on social media? Where can people work with you on a coaching basis?
So Instagram would be the main platform, @its_MartinaGood, because people can message me, and I'm always happy to have a chat in the DM. So yeah, if anyone is looking to find out any more information about everything that we've spoken today, I'm more than happy to have a chat. Also, YouTube, podcast, Martina Good, TikTok, Martina Good as well. If you type the name, then I'm sure like you'd be able to find out. But essentially, that's where you can find me. You can fill out a coaching application form via my link on Instagram or TikTok, and just let me know what your goals are, what you're struggling, and we can have a chat then as well, whether we are the right fit for each other. So that's coaching, and any free information or just simply to have a chat, Instagram is probably the best one. Just DM me and I'd be happy to help.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on, Martina.
Thank you so much for having me.
So massive thank you for everyone who has listened to the podcast, and massive thank you for Martina too, who has come on to the podcast to share her brilliant journey, her amazing journey, and also those really, really cool insights into a lot of different things. I think the biggest thing that I took away from the whole thing was that bodies will change. Bodies have to change. They're not going to be the same constant thing all the time. So I think it's a really, really useful insight into it. So if you're interested in working with Martina, click a link in the show notes in order to book in a call or work with Martina. And hopefully you've enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to download if you want to improve your relationship with food and get away from counting calories. Don't forget to click on the link in the show notes, and that will really help you as well. And if you want to work with myself, click on the link in the show notes and we can book in a one-to-one call. I have one space left for the rest of the month. So if you're interested, click a link in the show notes, and thank you again for listening.